This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
I'm Helen Farmer. Fantastic to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. On today's show, we're looking at children's health, we're looking at parenting and a big emphasis on education. The dreaded question, how was school today? If you're being met by total silence, you're in the right place. We were speaking to a school counsellor about how to be a better listener for your child and encouraging them to talk. Discussing the top 10 schools here in the UAE. They've made it into a list of 100 internationally of some of the best. Unpacking that list with Carfax Education. And in a time where it's back to school, waving our bigger kids off to university, how can we as families deal with transitions? Dr. Sarah Rasmi was on hand on a day where she was undergoing her own. And gaming. It is, of course, a big topic and an upcoming forum addressing the addictions, the crimes, and some of the regulations that need to be put in place. Dr. Marwan is one of the speakers, and he was giving us a little prediction of what lies ahead in the metaverse. And speaking of lying ahead, some ideas, some inspiration for what to do this weekend with the family. Simona, the co-founder of Kids App, that's kids with a Q, rounding you up some great deals and discounts to enjoy with the family.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It feels like everyone's in a bit of a stage of transition at this time of year, a new term, maybe a new school, waving off teens to university, maybe saying goodbye to friends as well. So how can we as grown-ups, parents, cope with these inevitable stages in life? And how can we support our kids as well? Joined now by Dr. Sarah Rasmi from Thrive Wellbeing Centre. And very happy to answer any of your questions as well. So do feel free to get in touch. Before we get to some advice, Dr. Sarah, I just want to send you a bit of a virtual hug through the screen today. Tell us about what's happening in your life today.
Thank you so much. It's a very well-received hug. Today, I am sending my son, my eldest, off to university in another country. Oh, so big transition up ahead for him and for the entire family.
Oh, Sarah, I think it's actually really useful to hear about the real stuff that, you know, mental health and well-being experts go through, because this is what makes you able to empathize and work with clients, is that you are living these things, you know, you truly get it. Can I ask how you're doing today?
I'm okay. My son texted me right before I started and he said, just don't bawl on the air. And I said, you know what? If I do, I do. It's just part of the process.
So. I cry quite a lot on the radio. I did it on Monday. So don't worry about it. It's a safe space. But listen, this is the thing. It's bittersweet, isn't it? You know, as parents, we know that growing up and heading off it's inevitable. And that's what we want. That's our job as parents, to make them ready and happy and confident and able to do that. I mean, it's very abstract for me with me having younger ones. I can't begin to even imagine it. What kind of things have you been doing in the run up to this day to, I guess, both of you kind of prepare a little bit for the inevitability?
We've been preparing for it for a couple of years now, just kind of knowing that it's on the horizon. And as any parent knows, time passes really, really quickly. Even if the days sometimes drag, overall, time really does seem to move quite fast. So just that preparation, and also making space for the fact that, like you just said, it is a time full of a range of emotions. So obviously, on the one hand, there's a lot of hope and there's optimism and there's excitement and joy. For me as well, there's a special amount of pride because my son is going to be studying psychology. So that's really extra special. But at the same time, there is a lot of sadness. There's grief about the loss, and, you know, there's a dread to tomorrow morning, waking up and not hearing the pitter patter of giant feet at this point, but still.
I think there's a comfort in the fact that the world's a lot smaller place now, you know, in terms of communication. When my mum moved age 19 to Abu Dhabi from Belfast, you know, it was sending letters home, and, you know, it was, you know, really expensive phone calls and things like that. Are you going to be having some time put aside for that communication? Have you got the family WhatsApp group all set up? What's in place?
Absolutely. But one of the things that I'm trying to do is just follow his lead. And I think that that's a piece of advice that I would probably share with other parents, as difficult as it might be. He's about to embark on this new journey, and the emphasis and priority over the next few weeks is going to be getting settled academically, getting settled socially, acclimating to a completely different socio-cultural context and day-to-day lifestyle. So I know, and I'm going to remind myself, that if he goes for a little bit longer than I might like without reaching out, that it's not personal. It's just him prioritizing what he needs to prioritize. And, you know, I will be there for him when he does reach out. And I'll try to give him a couple little nudges here and there, but give him the space at the same time.
You're so wise. If we can take it to kind of younger kids starting school, it's... I mean, my goodness, before my eldest started school, the night before, I was crying, like full ugly sobbing. And it wasn't so much about, you know, my little baby's all grown up. It was more to do with what I had, you know, perhaps been through at school, which, you know, I remember so vividly feeling really homesick, even, you know, a couple of miles down the road and not really understanding why I was there and, you know, all of that. And now we're a couple of weeks into term. I do hope that kids are settling in a little bit more. But if they're not, and perhaps not dealing with a transition particularly well, what do you tend to advise to kids, but also the parents, Sarah, to help kind of ease that distress?
I think always the most important thing is to just be there and to attune to the person that's in front of you. So providing that safe space for the child to be able to come to you to open up about what it is that they're experiencing, sharing in age-appropriate ways what it is that you're experiencing, asking those questions, engaging with other stakeholders like teachers, other professionals at the school, parents. I think those things are really important. But I also remember, Helen, you posted about something a while back, that the hug button. There are little things that you can do like that. And, you know, there are books like The Invisible String. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but all of these different messages.
There's the book called The Kissing Hand as well, which is about two little raccoons and the mummy kisses the baby raccoon's hand. And yeah, The Invisible String's a lovely one. And I think even if we're using these books or kind of tools as ways of talking about it, that can go a long way to address that it's okay. Absolutely. To perhaps be a bit upset and a bit struggling sometimes. And as you say, I know you're going to look back on this day, you know, a couple of months down the road and be like, oh my goodness, that was rough. But look where we are now. Dr. Sarah Rasmussen's with us this afternoon. We're going to be going to the text line next. We've had a message from a mum who's just gone back to work, struggling to adjust after maternity leave. And Jenny has reached out. Her kids left the UAE, have come back, and they've headed off again. She says, I'm absolutely heartbroken all over again. How can it be? They're 26, 24 and 31. We're going to help her out as well. Plus, advice for boosting a child's confidence before starting something new.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Now, though, we are talking transitions, and a beautiful quote Claudia sent in saying, a mother's job is to teach her children not to need her anymore. The hardest part of that job is accepting success. Dr. Sarah Rasmussen with us today from Thrive Wellbeing Centre. She's waving goodbye to her, I was going to say little boy, he's going to university. he's all grown up, but it doesn't make it any easier. We're going to go to the text line, Dr. Sarah. And of course, if you want to get in touch, by all means do. If you want to be anonymous, that's absolutely fine. And it's Dee that has messaged saying, I've been back at work 2 weeks and two long days and I'm struggling to adjust. I was so happy on maternity leave. I had what I'd always wanted and felt carefree, even though it wasn't really like that. I feel like it's all changed. I don't feel carefree anymore. I'm having a hard time adjusting. I had a rhythm and now it's gone, and I'm worried sick about our daughter at university. We've got two boys, age 6 and 4, and our youngest has started school. So this has been a big deal going back. Oh, not a question as such, but a tough situation. There's no, I don't know what to say, because I was you having a bit of a cry in the car after going back after maternity leave. And my best friend just went back 2 days ago and she sent me a tearful voice note last night. It's a really, really hard one. Any advice, Sarah?
It is a really hard one, and my heart really goes out to the listener. And I think one of the things that's really important is just being aware and in tune of the emotions that we're experiencing, knowing that any sort of change or transition, even if there might be an element of excitement to it, is going to be something that is quite mixed. There are going to be ebbs and flows, and that's part of the process. Some of the ways that we can navigate it are just being very gentle with ourselves, trying to take care of ourselves as best as we can. Obviously, trying to look after our needs from a physical perspective with diet, sleep, and exercise. But I think it's equally important to express our emotions, whether it's through sharing and reaching out like your best friend did with you, or if it's through creating something or some other kind of cathartic outlet. Mm-hmm. And social connections are incredibly important with people, especially who have gone through something similar. There's something very validating when someone has had that similar lived experience. And then if this feeling persists for a little period of time and it's starting to become disruptive to the day-to-day functioning, then it may also be a good idea to reach out for some support.
Definitely. And I think, as you say, being gentle with yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. Don't diminish what you're feeling. You know, don't say this is silly, or, you know, I should be over it by now, or it's been 2 weeks. This is ridiculous. Of course it's not. Of course it's not. Take your time. Don't deal with it. Feel with it. Jenny has been in touch saying, guys, thank you so much. I brought my sons to the UAE as a single mother from Zambia in the noughties. I was heartbroken when they left for uni and other adventures on their gap years. Last year, they all returned. Rented a house together and found jobs. I was overjoyed. However, they've decided this life is not for them and are now all leaving. In a way, it's worse than the first time around. I'm walking around the house in a daze, looking at all the stuff they've returned because they don't need it anymore. I feel utterly devastated this time around, but I know it's for their good. Heartbroken all over again. How could this be? They're 24, 26 and 31. Jenny, again, I want to be sending all the hugs down the line today. And exactly the same. Just because they're in their 20s and early 30s doesn't mean that, you know, that you're not allowed to feel upset about your kids. Any advice, Dr. Sarah asked me?
Well, I think the sense of loss is totally normal. And sometimes we expect that because we've been through something once before, that it's not going to hurt the second time around, when in fact, often it hurts as much or even more. I think one of the things that's important to remember, although it can be difficult at times, is that our children, these young men and young women now, they still need us. They just need us in a very different way. Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks volumes about the listener that her kids found the space so safe to come back after they finished. And they also find enough safety in the relationship to be able to open up and say, you know what, we tried it. This isn't for us, and we need to pursue something different. And she's there for them.
I love the idea of that role kind of changing as we get older. I think I heard an example, which was, you know, as your kids get older, you stop being a manager and start being a coach. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Now, Jenny, I've got no idea how old you are, but looking at the age of the kids, we had an amazing group of women on the show yesterday. They're called Over 50 and Fabulous. And one of their members, Camilla, who co-founded the group, was talking about that empty nest. And that was something that a lot of them are sharing and going through. And just as Dr. Sarah was saying there about finding people to talk to, this is a brilliant resource. So if you do want the information for that group, I'd be very happy to share it. But they're called Over 50 and Fabulous. And I'll tell you what, they were very fabulous indeed. They go out dancing, they sport together. They were just wonderful. So maybe finding your tribe might help in this situation. Dr. Sarah, before I let you get back, any quick tips for boosting a child's confidence before starting uni? It might be a new after-school activity. It might be, you know, an audition for the choir, or, you know, having a play date with a friend that they've just met. Anything that we can do as parents to give them a bit of a boost?
So the usual, just the open space for communication, listening, hearing, absorbing what it is that they say, validating their emotional experiences. But then on a more practical level, one of the things that can help is to provide them with some level of scaffolding. So thinking about how we can break what it is that they're worried about into smaller, more manageable steps, and then helping them go through those steps one at a time. So rather than throwing them into the deep end, you know, helping them ease their way into the pool. So I think that is one of the ways that
great
really
advice
helps.
For any age, never mind children. I'm going to be taking that on myself. Thank you so much, Dr. Sarah. Really do appreciate it. All the very best. More hugs to you and the family. You know what a fantastic time he's going to have, and maybe a bit more freedom. Maybe we can finally get that coffee we've been talking about for so long. Take care and talk to you very soon. You can find Dr. Sarah Rasmi and the entire team at Thrive Wellbeing Centre.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We've been talking transitions when it comes to families, and as Dr. Sarah Rasmi from Thrive is experiencing, waving off your teen to a new chapter, going to university, is definitely one of the most significant. Looking back, it was the weirdest thing. I remember seeing my mum's car driving off and I was there, not knowing anybody in the corridor and not knowing what to do or even where to go. It's a big one. University is a big one. So we're talking now about that choice, where to go for university, with a report that highlights the top considerations, the concerns of prospective university students and their parents as well. I'm joined now by Dima Al-Sadi. She's the event manager at Naja. This is the Higher Education Fair supported by the Ministry of Education. Dima, thank you so much for being with us. And I think raising some questions, helping us weigh up our priorities when it comes to choosing a university. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you, Helen.
Good.
How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. I find, yeah, it's a bit of a trip down memory lane thinking about university. For me, it was all about the choice of course. That was my kind of big priority. And we're going to be looking into reports. And if you want to share some of the things you were weighing up when you went off to university, or if you're thinking about it for your children, by all means, get in touch. Do we have more choice than ever? Is this a bit of a blessing in disguise or paralysis of choice when it comes to families?
Absolutely. So I share your thoughts, Helen. I mean, I always look back to when I was in high school, and, you know, I've had basically to make the biggest decision, I would say, one of the biggest decisions of where and what to study. And I must say, as a high school student, I was one of those who was very confused and definitely needed a lot of guidance. You know, I think it's there are definitely teenagers who definitely know what they want to study, where they want to go, and have everything lined up. However, I think most of us are at that age in the confused stage mm-hmm. of, okay, if we know what we want to study, we're not sure of the options. We're not sure of where, you know, how easy it is if we want to study abroad, how easy it is to travel abroad. If we want to stay in the country, you know, what are the options in the country? Are the universities, what's the accreditation as well internationally? So, for example, if I study in a university in the UAE, is it accredited if I go, for example, later on to Canada, and so on? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions and a lot of choice as well. And yes, back in the day when I was in high school, there was a lot of choice. And now it's even more with, you know, now there are so many AI programs and STEM programs, and it's just the options are much, much bigger. But I think, sorry, go ahead.
How did you narrow it down, you personally, when it came to choosing? Because as I said, choice, of course, was a big one for me. And I wanted to be close enough to my parents I could maybe get a train home and do some laundry, but not so close that they could pop in on a Sunday morning.
Absolutely. So yeah, it was the same for me. I think at the time I was supporting my family a little bit, so I definitely needed to stay closer to home here in the UAE, because I grew up over here. So that was one decision. And I kind of studied what I liked, I must say, but that didn't necessarily mean that was what I ended up working in.
Mm-hmm. That's very familiar story. I want to ask about that, you know, staying in the UAE or going abroad, especially when we look at expats. Talking to a colleague about this the other day, and her daughter is GCSE age. They're originally from the UK, but, you know, daughter's born and raised here. And she doesn't necessarily feel any affiliations with the UK. And I think that was I think it's a very natural assumption that a child might go to where perhaps their passport is from. But these kids have grown up really international with, you know, friends from all over the world. You know, traveling is much more easy, thank goodness, since the last couple of years, you know, than years gone by as well. What kind of questions should you be asking to weigh up the where to go, narrow it down to even a continent or a country, Dima?
No, absolutely. So I think what's helpful is, as you mentioned, you know, I think, you know, your friend's daughter was exactly like me. So I grew up here in the UAE, and exactly, you don't necessarily feel, you know, it's almost you're kind of a new. There should be basically a new, what do you want to call it? I miss the word, but you know, you don't really feel like you belong somewhere specifically, whether it's your home country or so on. So in terms of narrowing down where to study, I think it is very, very helpful. And I think what was missing for me actually at the time when I was wanting to choose is being able to actually speak to university representatives from different countries, understanding also, depending, for example, on your nationality as well, and, you know, how hard or how easy it is to travel. You know, I know, yes, it is easier, I would say, in general to travel nowadays, but I know some of us, you know, have to go through more lengthy visa processes.
Absolutely.
In terms of applying. So I think getting an understanding of that, depending on which country the student is interested, and understanding, you know, if the universities in those countries have the programs that a student might be interested in. And I think also basically, or I believe, it is also important to link what you are looking for. What is missing, basically, if I can go back a bit, what is missing, I think, is an understanding of what you would work with certain programs or certain academic programs when you study them. You know, so for example, understanding a person who studies chemical engineering, you know, when they're in high school, do they really understand what they would be doing with that degree if they go through with that? And I think that's also what's lacking.
Couldn't agree more. A bit of clarity on the other side. And there's been quite a lot in the press recently on, I guess, return on investment on university fees, you know, talking about certain subjects. You know, you might earn more once you graduate, and others you might be somewhat unemployable. So let's talk money, because in this report, 68% of people said that fees were top of their list when it came to making decisions around university. Can you unpack that a little bit more? What were any feedback that you got from the study?
Yes, absolutely. So again, you know, the financial is actually one of the biggest implications on decision making or on where you want to study. So, you know, we have, again, as we know in the UAE, we have families with different incomes, and some the parents support their children's education financially, and in other families, the student himself or herself need to support themselves in terms of working part-time to pay for university. So that is definitely a big factor. So if you have, you know, I think it's basically the university fees as in, you know, how much the university charges. But besides that, if there are opportunities in that country, for example, work, you know, part-time working opportunities or opportunities to work at the university, you know, if there's financial aid, scholarship opportunities, I think all of that plays part in this decision making to understand, because again, financials, you know, we all have certain incomes and it varies, you know, from low income to high income. Everyone wants to finish university. University now is, you know, a major factor in getting any job. It's becoming like, you know, the lowest degree that you need to actually get an office job.
You also looked at things like scholarships, the courses, of course, location, accreditations, extracurricular activities, and parental influence. So 12% there stating that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Naja? As I said, the Higher Education Fair is supported by the Ministry of Education, and it's taking place in about a month's time. So I know you're very busy in the run-up to that. Who is eligible to attend, and what can they expect there?
Absolutely. So Najah, by the way, just to explain what Najah actually means. Najah means success. So it's the Arabic word for success. And it is exactly what the fair stands for. So it's we invite basically high school students between grades 10 and 13, along with mid-career professionals, university students, and graduates who are also looking for postgraduate opportunities. So it caters, we have universities, whether it's UAE-based universities and international universities that are participating, who have undergraduate and postgraduate courses. International universities, we have universities from actually quite a number of countries this year, including the US, the UK, Canada, France, Spain, Hungary, Italy, as well as Japan and Malaysia. So there is a massive, massive, choice. And I think what is very important about Najah is it gives the opportunity for students, their parents, to actually come to the fair and speak in person to university representative. And I think this is very important because, you know, a lot of us go online and we're trying to find information, but we are a bit lost because, as you said, you know, there are way too many choices online. But when you're coming and you are able to speak to a representative in person and have a full understanding directly of what each university offers, and if it directly matches what you are looking for, I think that is a really powerful tool in helping those students make a choice of where and what they want to study.
Thanks, Dima. And can I ask you, would you do things differently? Would you go somewhere different or study something else now with a few more years of experience under your belt?
Yes, I think I wish Najah was there at the time when I was having to make this choice, to be honest. Yes. I would definitely potentially have made the different choice.
Never too late. Yeah, if anyone does want to find out more, it's najahexpo.com. Dima, really appreciate your time. As I said, very busy in the run-up to this fair, so I'll let you get back to your no doubt towering pile of emails, but hope it goes well, and keep us posted on some of the trends that you uncover through some of those discussions next month. NajahExpo.com for registration for prospective university students, parents and teachers is now open.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Listen earnestly to anything your children want to tell you, no matter what. If you don't listen eagerly to little stuff when they are little, they won't tell you the big stuff when they're big, because to all of them, it has always been big stuff. We demand our children listen to us, but do we really listen to them? Oh, bit of self-examination happening in the studio with me this afternoon. We're talking about how to be a great listener as a parent today with GEMS Wellington Academy's Silicon Oasis, the counsellor there, Mahira Zakiuddin. Thank you so much for being with us. You're also a mum of two, so you've got your professional social work education hat on, but also what's worked with you in practice with your 11-year-old in year four as well. Can I ask you to kind of get an idea, first of all, about types of listening? Can you unpack it a little bit for us?
Absolutely, Helen, and thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
I am very, very passionate about this topic, and I can tell you that there are actually lots of different types of listening. And the four that I have found and have explored to be useful with young people / young children are active listening, deep listening, critical listening, and discriminative listening.
You're going to have to break them down for me.
I will do just that. So active listening is really has a lot to do with your nonverbal cues and body language. It's also a lot of clarifying statements. So if someone comes to you and talks to you about something, instead of starting interviewing them, which is something that we all are guilty of, active listening is asking them to clarify, tell me more. This is how I understand it. Is this how you understand it? So a lot of reflective back to them, but also your body language is focused. You know, many of us are distracted and fragmented because of our work or
phones,
exactly. So important to make sure that you have no distractions around. So that's active listening. Deep listening is something that is required, especially if your child comes to you and discloses something that can be very troubling for this young person. So this requires actually no responses and only nodding and really getting into that deep seat of empathy and really examining how that child or person in front of you is feeling. And that is a hard place to be.
It is, especially if it's something that is troubling them, because our natural instinct as parents is to rush in and try and understand first, but fix it second and fast.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is something, I will tell you this, this is something that as counselors we do a lot, but it is a great skill to have for parents as well, because it allows for that bond to take place. And to give yourself permission to not fix it and just be present can be a really powerful experience. So that is deep listening. Now, critical listening is something that I think we all are experts at, which is absolutely picking up on the smallest of things and examining it. And it's important. Don't get me wrong. Critical listening is very, very important and should be used in, especially in if there is an emergency or something that's happened. So it is a skill, but it's about when and how. Mm-hmm. So it's really sharpening those questioning skills, those interviewing, and making sure that you're getting that information out from the child. Critical listening can only happen if you have done enough active listening and deep listening.
To get to that point.
Yeah.
Okay. And lastly,
is discriminative listening.
This sounds awful. What is it?
Well, it is only taking information that you are trying to decipher and make sense of a situation. So it is important as well, but sometimes it can be detrimental because your child may come to you and share an entire story and at the end of it do something that has got them into trouble. And all you listen to is they got into trouble. Mm-hmm. So that is discriminative listening. And again, it has its uses at some point, and I'm talking about extreme situations, but we have to be cautious about using that skill.
Okay. Mahira, we've got some questions on the text line. Amy just says, any tips for them listening to us? Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a topic for another show.
Yeah.
Amy, trust me, I had the same thought. Can I ask then, what are some of the benefits to our children's self-esteem or even our relationship with them when they truly feel like they're being listened to?
You know, it's incredible how important listening is for communication. And if you go back to biology or, you know, even the time when we are born, the first thing the doctor does is kind of pats the baby on the back to check, you know, if they're fine, if they're neurotypically, they're performing well. And therefore, listening is a really important function for relationship building. And we don't just listen with our ears because we are hearing, but listening has an entire aspect of understanding and identifying. Mm-hmm. And that is a mental cognitive skill. So I would go as far as saying it is the ground kind of foundation work that you do in a relationship.
Do you think you can learn how to be a good listener?
Absolutely.
Do you think some people are naturally better at it than others?
I think that it depends. It depends on what kind of environment you are born in, raised with. If you're around people who are able to model good listening, you're bound to become a good listener.
We're talking about listening to our children, how to listen so they will talk. But what if they're reluctant to open up? We're putting this to our resident school counsellor next.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us now from GEMS Wellington Academy in Silicon Oasis is the school counsellor. Mahira Zakiuddin is joining us to answer my questions and yours about listening. She's also a mum of two, so she has got that dual role of being involved in education and has worked in Pakistan, in the US and here in the UAE, but also as a mum of two. Great question, and one I think is very apt right now. How to ask them how school was. Thank you for raising this. Mine do good. Can't remember. And then about 2 minutes before bedtime, I cannot shut them up about the most random stuff. So again, I'm guessing it's not working for me. How was school is not the way to go?
Yeah, I think that is a question that stumps most parents. And I'm going to say that timing is key. So sometimes the question that when we ask straight as soon as you come back from school or in the car, the ride back home, and there's a silence, that's kind of indication of the fact that that's not the right time. So I would imagine that when they have changed their clothes, kind of relaxed, and then approached the topic, one way of getting them to talk about your day, their day, is to talk about your day. So one of the techniques I tried with my tween was starting off and sharing some highlights of my day. And that started her curiosity. Mm-hmm. And then she started sharing about her day. Now, this is not true every time. This is not like something that can work always. But it does get them interested because remember, they've spent the entire day in which they've been given lots of instructions and lots of things to follow through. So asking another question may not like be the right way. Yeah.
That's interesting about the kind of highlight. That's what we did when we were on holiday around the dinner table every night. We're like, what are your three highlights? What was your low light? And what are you looking forward to? And that was actually a really nice thing to do. But something that kind of works in our household is if I sit down and be like, tell me X, Y, Z, not interested. But if we're doing something like Lego or playing a game or, you know, I don't know, doing something in the kitchen, that seems to kind of be a bit of a sneaky way of them talking without, you know, without realizing what I'm getting at. You mentioned tweens there. Leslie's been in touch saying, when is the best time of day to broach a topic with a tween? Because they're always too busy, apparently. Yeah. Go on, give me a little flash forward into my life.
What I will say is that it's absolutely true for most parents, as far as I know. Tweens is hard. Again, it comes back to relationships, and this is about the time where you need to ask for their permission. So you can actually set a time with them and say, hey, I want to talk to you about something. Let me know what works for you. And then they give you that time. I know that it's really odd, and some of us, especially myself, you know, I've been raised in a culture in which I walk up to a young person and ask a question, and the expectation is that they're going to be ready with an answer. So maybe kind of preparing them, telling them that you're interested in talking about something, just, you know, having their opinion. They love knowing that you want their opinion about something. Let me tell you that if you go up to a young person and say, hey, I'm really interested on your perspective on this or your opinion, watch their eyes open up and jump in.
Top tip. Thank you so much for your time today. I would love to have you back and talk about them listening to us another time, if that would be okay.
Absolutely. I'm ready to come.
Thank you so, so much, Mahira, joining us there from GEMS Wellington Academy. We are staying with education next and talking about apparently top 10 schools in the UAE.
Family Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking education this hour, and a new index has come out naming the 10 UAE schools among the top 100 private schools in the world. Talking us through this list and how it can affect parents and student choices is Fiona McKenzie, the head of Carfax Education, who are integral in putting together the index. Fiona's back to school. It's chaos out there.
It is, isn't it? I know, and properly fully back to school for everybody this year. Goodness. So it's a big moment.
And some new schools in the UAE. There's new schools on the horizon. What's the landscape feeling like? What kind of gossip are you hearing?
Oh,
what's
my goodness going on? It's just such a dynamic education landscape out here. I think that's one of the most exciting things about working in the education kind of arena out here. So you have four new schools opened this year, all going kind of great guns, and very different schools as well, which is great. So it's keeping that kind of diversity in the marketplace. And more schools coming. And you know, that kind of plays very much into the conversation we're going to have about the kind of the index, because it's an exciting place to be educationally.
Well, as I said, 10 schools in the UAE have made it into that index. Shall we? And this is in no particular order. As we said, it's not a ranking, it is an index. Let's name them and let's kind of unpick a little bit about the criteria used in order for them to earn that spot. Can you give us a little rundown?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing to kind of bear in mind is that this is it's an index, not a ranking, and it's a global index. So we are looking at schools absolutely across the globe, and we are picking the ones. This is done in conjunction with an organisation called Spears, who have a very sort of high net worth readership, and we work with them to curate this list of schools, which is kind of, you know, the sorts of schools that their readers would be interested in sending their children. And it's done, it's divided by geographical region, and we kind of play with that kind of regional bias each year. And this year, I felt very strongly that we needed to have a bigger representation from the Middle East, mm-hmm. because I just feel that the marketplace is growing so dramatically here. Certainly from a Carfax perspective, we've seen lots of families moving into this region. 14,000 children enrolled within the school year last year in Dubai.
Really?
Within the school year.
So this is not talking kind of, you know,
not at the beginning
of September.
Year. No, that was across the school year. I mean, I think that gives you some indication of the kind of growth that's going on here. So it's tipped past the 300,000 mark. We obviously don't have the data for this September yet, but I'm excited to see that. So it's, you know, people are flocking to Dubai. I think there's lots of good news about Dubai and Abu Dhabi, you know, the UAE generally. And that's why we increased the kind of number of schools in the Middle East here this
10
year.
10 have earned a spot and in no particular order. In fact, you know what, we'll do it in alphabetical order because that's what we have in front of us. I won't play any Top of the Pops rundown music for us.
No.
You know? But can you give us that list?
Surely. So so in Abu Dhabi, we've got Brighton College. Then we've got the British School Al Kabayat also in Abu Dhabi. The British School Al Kabayat being around a long time, very well established part of the kind of education landscape over there. Brighton College, a sort of what we might term a sister school, has a kind of campus in the UK and obviously has its first campus internationally was in Abu Dhabi. And they also now have one here in Dubai. Exactly. Crani Abu Dhabi also made it into the index. Again, another what we might term sister school, very well established, fantastic build, has got off to a flying start and is actually expanding again at the moment. And then we have Dubai College, which will be obviously well known to many of the listeners here, one of the top academic schools in the region.
Not just academic, their gym's better than my gym.
They have got fantastic
serious facilities.
And they're doing serious investment into their campus as well. So a very good news story there. But you know, Dubai College would happily sit in amongst the kind of top 20 schools in the UK. Mm-hmm. So highly academic, highly selective as well. So, you know, that also plays into that. And then for the first time this year, Jumeirah College made it into the list. So
I might talk to you this off air. Only because it's crazy that my daughter's 7 and we're already thinking about secondary school.
Yes, well, you're not too early to start.
Oh,
you know, it is a competitive landscape out here. But then having said that, with lots of new schools opening up and schools that have been open for 2 or 3 years now, they're kind of, you know, growing on stream, there's more and more choice in the marketplace as well. So there's always a school for someone, I promise.
Okay. I'll send you a WhatsApp. So we've got Jumeirah College.
Jumeirah College and then Jess. And then again, I said another all-time favourite out here, well-established, not-for-profit, very, very popular with families over here.
Oh, I mean, I've got to full disclosure, I put my daughter on the waiting list there when she was, I think, 2 months old. I remember going and she was in like a little papoose baby carrier. Aww. And I was still too late.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the reality. I mean, we have parents constantly knocking on our door saying, you know, Fiona, how do we get our children into
You want to go back in
Jets?
Time.
Yeah, well, that is indeed the case. But I mean, very occasionally they do have spots and it, you know, it's a very, very popular choice. Nord Anglia also made it onto the index for the first time this year. I think they got off to a kind of strong start. Very popular school, very wide appeal, Nord Anglia. And obviously now doing the A-levels and IB at the end, which is a popular choice. North London Collegiate also, another what we might term sister school. That's the first time that we featured them on this index in the Middle East. And again, I think that's been very much driven by the parental demand that we've seen. You know, it's a very, very popular school with parents out here. You never hear people kind of, I mean, we all know that in the Middle East, well, certainly in the kind of UAE, parents move schools quite regularly. Mm-hmm. But we've always, you know, the parents that we know have always been very happy with LCS. And then Swiss Scientific International, also first time for that one. And that, I think, just earns its place in the index book. For me, it's one of those schools that is unique in what it does out here with the kind of the different
boarding offering as well.
Absolutely. So that's a kind of very standalone and that's kind of how it earned its place, if you like, in the index this year. And then Repton School, which obviously has been here for 15 years now, is regularly kind of been awarded the outstanding and again has the kind of boarding and a very kind of international global kind of approach and another what we might call sister school. So yeah, so those are the ones that are featuring in the Middle East this year. So I think it's such a good news story
it
for
is,
the UAE.
It is, 10 out of 100.
Yeah, it's 10%.
Is significant
very.
When we think about kind of the offering. What impact do you think this index might have on, I guess, changing a perception of the UAE education system and the wider Middle East as well?
Well, I think what it'll do is to alert the rest of the world to the fact that actually there's an incredibly strong education offering out here. Mm. I mean, I don't know how long you've been in this part of the world, Helen, but you know...
15 years.
15 years. Okay, so you see, when I first got here, sort of 12 years ago, you'd say to people, how long have you been here? Oh, 2 years, 3 years. And if somebody said 15 years, like, wow, that's a long time. Now that's quite normal. And I strongly strongly feel that's been driven by the kind of education provision out here. People stay longer. They've got great schools.
That's such an interesting point, because when we had kids, we had said, we'll put them through primary and then we'll go back to the UK because we're not sure about the secondary offering here. And that has completely changed.
Yeah. And I think you're one of many families who are saying that. And I think that's been such an incredibly smart move by the kind of KHD out here to attract all these fantastic schools, because people stay longer. They've got great schools.
Also, even my mum stopped asking when we're going back now. I think she understands that, you know,
yeah,
the grass is not greener necessarily.
It's and a hard place
interestingly
to leave.
A lot of people, I mean, even anecdotally that I know, have gone back to their home country only to go, grass was definitely not greener. We're coming back to Dubai. So we're getting people returning to the UAE, maybe with slightly older kids, and looking at that kind of that secondary
age. And I think parents can feel really confident about that, because, you know, the academic results are there. And you know, one of the criteria we look at when we're selecting the schools is academic kind of results. And that falls into the results, so the IB A-level results, GCSE results. But it's also the kind of destination data, because, you know, the end of the game is you want your child to be able to go to a top university somewhere in the world. And of course, what's amazing about the schools out here is they look 360. So, you know, if you want to do marine biology, yes, you might look at St Andrews in England and you know, Exeter, but you'll also look at Florida and you'll also look at Australia, because we just come with that mindset from here. So,
a really interesting question from James I want to put to you before I let you get back to your busy day, Fiona. Saying, any strong recommendations for great schools when kids aren't that academic but capable and sporty? Interesting question, because a lot of these are very academic and academically driven. And we're looking at Dubai College, where, you know, it's like 94% get, you know, A stars and, you know, amazing, amazing results.
But it is such a good question. Yeah, no, it is such a good question. And one of the things we are also, I mean, the academic results is certainly part of what we look for, but it is very much also schools that have got something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Schools that are preparing their children for the world outside of academia. That's a really key thing for us. And that is very much more about the all-round schools. So it's, you know, it's not just, it is about the academic results at some level, but it's equally, you know, what are the extracurriculars like? How are they equipping them with the 21st century skills? Entrepreneurship, innovation, those sorts of things. What else are they doing? So, yeah, that's a key part of what we
is
consider.
This something that you could advise on in your kind of consultation role if people are looking to explore options?
Absolutely. That's what we kind of do all the time. And whilst this is a kind of global index, you know, what I would say is that this isn't a list for a particular family or a particular child. You know, it's all about knowing your child and understanding what's going to be right for your child. And that's what we spend a lot of time doing, getting to know you and your family and identifying the right school for your child, because that's when it's going to work.
And you know that school when you walk in and you meet the staff and you feel your shoulders drop and you see your child smile. And sometimes it is, you know, it's just a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what we do is help parents kind of identify that shortlist, because it's very overwhelming, the choices.
So, also saying there's so many.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best will in the world to a lot of friends and people in the community. But when you ask what school they're going to, they want you to make the same decision because it validates their decision. You know?
Absolutely. And the information you pick up is always very coloured by their opinion.
Of course.
You know, maybe their child's had a bad experience or a good experience, but it's their child's experience, not yours.
Exactly. So to be able to speak to someone who has really literally been there, seen it, done it with all of the schools. Fiona, for anyone who does want to reach out to you and avail of your expertise and services, what's the best way of getting in touch?
So the best way is to contact us on www.carfaxeducation.com.
Thank you so, so much. We will talk privately because the secondary school thing is making my head fall off. But great to have you here.
Thank you.
Do appreciate it. If you do want to find out more about that, you can go to spearswms.com, where you can find the full index.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Turning our attentions this hour to the risks, the challenges and the opportunities of online games, but also addressing potential crimes and scams. Just before the Al Ameen Services Forum on the same topic comes in just a few days, falling on the 19th of September. And joined now by one of the speakers at the event, Dr. Marwan Al-Zarouni is the CEO of Dubai Blockchain Centre and the managing partner at Asselliance Consultancy. He's also strategic advisor to Everdome, a hyper-realistic metaverse and Web3 experience. And you're going to have to promise me, Dr. Marwan, to not baffle me with tech jargon because it makes my head almost fall off. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. My pleasure to be here, actually.
Can I ask you a bit of a personal question? Do you game yourself? Are you a gamer?
I used to be. I still do on a number of platforms, but I would not call myself a hardcore gamer.
What did you enjoy about gaming when you were, you know, enjoying it for entertainment, you know, connection, fun? What were you playing and what did you get out of it?
Since I was a young kid, actually, I was very competitive in sports. So that translated very well to esports, actually. So I participated in esports tournaments around football mostly, because that's my basic hobby. But also other, you know, competitive e-games, like Olympic type games. Anything competitive, basically.
I'm not counting Candy Crush's gaming, but what I think a lot of people get out of it is this sense of escapism, and sometimes it's connection in a different space or it's disconnection from yourself. And I think at the minute a lot of people have got concerns about that other, the other place. You know, we think about Metaverse and Web3, and this is very much what we're going to be tapping into in this upcoming forum. And we are seeing increasing reports of children and adults hooked on online games, spending hour upon hour in their rooms. What are some of the main challenges we're facing in this space at the moment, Dr. Marwan?
I think the economics show that there's a lot of spending actually in games. This is one of the challenges for families and also for governments, control over how much children spend online. We've seen in the latest statistics that gaming takes the vast majority of it, whether it is actually active playing or passive watching of content related to gaming. So it is really at a time now with this advent of the metaverse strategy and metaverse kind of taking the forefront of the headlines right now and being the hot topic. I think we need to refocus our attention on the opportunities as well as the challenges that are there, and also some of the risks associated with this kind of economy.
Mm-hmm. Not just spending time, but spending money. A friend of mine found out her son has spent 20,000 dirhams on online app purchases, and there was absolutely no recourse as well. So a good bit of education in schools, but perhaps for us as parents as well, about what our kids might be up to without our knowledge. Let's talk then about the forum. What are the aims of this event next week, Dr. Marwan? And what are you going to be addressing?
The aim is to align with the providers, actually, when it comes to this basically governing the metaverse, as well as really providing a safe environment for kids where they can actually learn from these kind of experiences. A lot of schools and a lot of governments actually created immersive learning experiences for kids, and aligning with the game developers on that aspect is extremely important from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Also, mental health is extremely important. Addiction to games and spending, you know, vast amount of times without realizing how much time and, of course, money you spend on these games is very important. One of the aspects that we're actually covering in this forum is actually the idea of play-to-earn games, which is a new kind of an economic model that was not there before. And Metaverse and Web3 really presented this kind of economic model for people to stay longer online and play and earn while they play rather than spend money.
Can you explain that to us, Dr. Marwan? When you say play-to-earn, who's paying them to play?
Web3 kind of companies, blockchain-based companies, where you actually initially buy a character and then you play to level up, literally. And then from there, you can sell that character, or you can even breed that character. So basically, you marry two characters and you can breed a third character that you can sell.
Honestly, I really hope I'm not going to live to regret this conversation. And I will play it back in 5 years' time. I'm like, Helen, you were missing a trick there. I find it so confusing, and to the point where it makes me reject it. And that's what I worry about, because I think a lot of parents feel the same. And it is in that space where, you know, children are spending time perhaps where they shouldn't, where cyber crimes and scams and predators, you know, really, you know, capitalize on gaps in our knowledge. What are some of the crimes that we have seen in the past in this space, Dr. Marwan? What do we need to be aware of?
I think it's twofold. So one of them is, like you mentioned, there's a lot of cybercrime related to gaming, and with the advent of NFTs as well, a lot of people got scammed and lost their NFTs, which are valuable commodities, digital commodities. A lot of the crimes we've seen also is solicitation of kids by adults, as well as literally recruitment for terrorists and ill organizations that want to recruit through gaming. It is actually not far-fetched. This is actually happening right now, and it will happen in the future in a more substantial way.
Can we talk then about regulation? What is in place right now currently in the metaverse? Who is regulating, or indeed who should be doing more?
Right now, it's literally the early days. So
it's the Wild West.
When we talk about regulation, it's not really regulation in the classic sense, but it's more like technical enforcement. We've seen a couple of days ago also a huge attention to the Twitter and Elon Musk's deal, and where they highlighted through a whistleblower that a lot of time is not spent actually on security, but a lot of time spent by a lot of these social networks on actually getting more numbers and getting more people to be onboarded. Mm-hmm. So we need to really refocus those kind of organizations to not only focus on the numbers, but rather create a safe environment, which will be actually down the line on long-term basis more lucrative for people to jump in. Nobody wants to jump in a toxic environment, and that's agreed upon from both sides, the provider, a technical company, and as well from the government perspective.
We're keeping Dr. Marwan Alzarini with us this afternoon as we unpick the metaverse. There is an upcoming forum on exactly this topic. He is the CEO of Dubai Blockchain Center. Happy to take your questions, your comments in this, any concerns you might have, or you want to share the experiences of you or your family when it comes to online gaming, blockchain and the metaverse. And we're going to be asking next, where does Dr. Marwan see the metaverse in the next few years? And what should we as parents be doing, plus the game manufacturers, to keep the children safe?
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Looking ahead now to an upcoming forum. It's taking place on the 19th of September, the Alameem Service Forum, on the topic of blockchain, risks and challenges of online games and crimes, and really informing some of the providers about what lies ahead. And joining us now is one of the speakers at the event, Dr. Marwan Alzarini. He is the CEO of Dubai Blockchain Centre, the managing partner at Ascellience Consultancy, and also strategic advisor to Everdome, a hyper-realistic metaverse and Web3 experience. We're taking any questions, concerns you might have on this. And a question on here from Sammy, Dr. Marwan, saying, my worry about the metaverse is that it's going to be better than real life and people won't want to leave. What's your take?
That's actually already happening.
Oh, no!
We have something called, an expression called IRL, which is in real life. So people spend more time in the metaverse than actually in real life. This is one of the aims of the forum. The aim of the forum is to bring focus to this kind of behavior. Spending a lot of time online is not healthy. Mm-hmm. And there's another term called away from keyboard, AFK. So these are actually now a threat, really a challenge for us to overcome as families and as governments and regulators, as well as a really responsible industry.
I remember we used to type BRB, which was, be right back, and you'd step away from your computer. And now there is no BRB. We're online all the time. We have that computer in our pocket. So can you tell us then, if we're looking at online gaming platforms and manufacturers, what kind of regulations or changes would you think responsible people need to be putting in place to protect their users?
I think it's a collaborative work. So a lot of it has to do with schools and bringing curriculum within schools about awareness, being aware of where you are. So self-awareness is extremely important by the children actually from a really young age. We have to really give them a habit of knowing how much time they spend online. Mm-hmm. A lot of these games not only incentivize you to spend more time, but incentivize you also to spend more money. And if they are mentally aware and they have that in the back of their head, they have a better chance of, switching off responsibly. Another part is actually the parents being involved rather than distant from their kids. You mentioned a couple of minutes ago that you yourself, you are intimidated by this technology and the jargon of play to earn. Try to, invest in your kids by actually learning how play to earn works, jumping on board with them, playing with them a game, whether it is something like a 3D game or even an addictive, hyper games that are on apps, all these kind of things, and your kids seeing you playing it and really learning by example that you know when to switch off. If they see you on your phone 24/7 and they are on their phone 24/7, it really shows them that it is okay to be online for this long, and you really need to switch off, and you really need to have a healthy, you know, relationship with your kids where you lead by example rather than limit their time, but you spend a lot more time online.
Well said. Something I need to listen to there, Moen. And lastly, what are your predictions for the metaverse in the next few years? And I don't just mean necessarily in terms of the tech advancements or what industry insiders might be doing, but for, you know, people listening today, how do you think our lives are going to change?
I think predicting more than 5 years is extremely hard to do. But I think in the next few years, we'll use the same devices, actually. But the experiences will be a bit more different. The feeling or tactile sensors will be out there because they are cheap to produce. And I think you'll see a lot of devices where we will be not only interacting with a glass screen on our phones, but rather have some kind of a Bluetooth-based device where you get some kind of a feedback from these 3D games and experiences that the metaverse will provide.
Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate your insights. And as I said, you are going to be speaking there at an upcoming forum from Al Amin. Dr. Moen Alzarouni, thank you so much. Really do appreciate it. And let's catch up, not in a couple of years, but hopefully before that, to see if those predictions do unfold. Dr. Moen Alzarouni, the CEO of Dubai Blockchain Center. And if you do have any concerns around online gaming, particularly addictions to it, we are going to be addressing this with a recovery coach over the coming weeks. So do make sure you tune in. It's going to be on a Tuesday, and I will, of course, let you know when that is going to be.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are getting you in the mood and organised for the weekend ahead with Simona Agolini. She is the CEO, co-founder of Kids App. That's Kids with a Q. So we're rounding up some great new additions and crucially, some great deals as well, saving you a few dirhams this weekend. Simona, how are you?
I'm good. It's great to see you again.
It's great to see you, even though it's through a screen. but so much happening. Everyone I speak to right now is feeling super overwhelmed. And I think this is starting to make weekends feel more precious than ever. So a little bit of planning to get the most out of it, build in some activities, build in some time just to be together and bored. And crucially, try some things around town that you haven't tried before. We're also taking questions. So by all means, get in touch if you've got a bit of a kids activity conundrum. What are some of your favorite kind of new additions to Kids App?
Well, I think, as you said, it's been a hectic start to September, but with the positive that the weather's getting good, which is great. I'm really happy about that. So I've kind of broken it into different things. I've kind of got like iconic sites to visit and things to do when you've got visitors in town, or burn some energy and some cool deals, or after school. So, how about I give you some iconic ones? I think taking the family to Museum of the Future is a really good thing to
Please
do if you haven't done that yet.
Don't judge me. I haven't been yet. My husband took the kids when his parents were here, and I just haven't had the opportunity. He said it was amazing for kids. What's your take? What are some of the big attractions there?
Well, to be honest, I just think it's such an iconic building in itself, like just going there and, you know, really stand out. I think the way they've laid it out inside is really cool. There's some really cool concepts that, you know, make you think. And I just think there's so much you can do with it. And that, you know, it's been named the most beautiful building in the world. And I think your kids and families should get to see that. So that's one of my favorites.
So are there Dubai icons that you think are family friendly?
Well, I think Skyviews is family friendly. So if you go to the address and you go to Skyviews, I think that everyone can have an adrenaline rush walking on the glass bottom.
The slide.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that that's another fun one to do. You know, we have a deal on it off peak hours. It's 80 dirhams for adults, 65 dirhams for kids. So it's expensive, but doesn't break the bank. And I think, you know, it's a special treat. It's a fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. Mohammed bin Rashid Library, that's free.
Oh, my goodness. It's so special. I haven't actually taken the kids yet. As you say, completely free. Happy days indeed. You need to pre-book your appointment time.
Yeah.
Also, dress modestly. Folks, I did see some people being turned away when I was there. And
well, we got turned away the first time,
Simona,
and it wasn't because of me. My husband was wearing long shorts. So yes, you really do have
put it
to
away, Mr. Aglini.
Very modestly.
But it is, as you walk in, the children's library is on the left, and it is the library that I would have dreamt of as a child. It has got slides and climbing and little reading nooks and, you know, books at eye height for kids. It's so special, so gorgeous, and as you say, completely free. So that is a great one. I'm not sure how busy it is in terms of needing to book ahead, so definitely do have a little investigate on that, and don't just count on turning up. You need to have that slot.
Yeah, you need to have your QR code. I mean, we booked the day before and we got the slot that we wanted, so I think that it is manageable, but do book, definitely. So those are some of my iconic ones. I would say that if you want to get away for the weekend, the Long Beach Campground, the glamping in Ras Al Khaimah, is a brilliant kids' place. And I think the parents can have a pretty good time there as well.
I had a very good time. We stayed in the safari tent. But there's all different accommodation, from kind of more basic teepees on the beach all the way through to these incredible dome tents. I think they've even introduced a new suite that's got a hot tub or something. But it's all inclusive, so super easy for grabbing food off the buffet. But as you say, it's end-to-end activities.
Now,
yes.
If you book now, between now and the end of November, I think there's up to 35% off.
Ooh,
so
that's well
check
worth
it.
Out. But the activities for kids do not stop, from building sandcastles or paddleboarding in the morning. They've got kids' movies. They had kite flying, marshmallow roasting. It really is absolutely, it is fun for all the family, to use a much overused term, but it really is. So that's Long Beach. What about the after school activities? Because I feel like a lot of people have kind of locked themselves in for things and gone, actually, that wasn't really what we wanted. What are some of your favorites?
So look, I'm a super big fan of AIS Athletics. I don't know if you know it, but it's they've got all ex-British champions. There's actually one of the trainers, he's just got a gold medal at the recent championships. And they basically are all across, well, in different locations, at Gems Wellington, etc. But basically, you go and do athletics, running, track and field, shot put, long jump and so on. And it's just a really great atmosphere, and they do race nights. So that's one I recommend. And it's also really affordable. It's 2,000 dirhams for the year to go one times per week. And there's different types of memberships you can get. But I find it super affordable. Another one, Urban Swim Academy. They're all over the place. They're in Jebel Ali, Jumeirah Islands, in loads of different locations. And you can pay per class, or again, you can sign up. They've got toddler classes, they've got older classes. So it's a great place to sign up your kids for swimming and to be outdoors. For the younger ones, I think that you've got Gymboree. Gymboree have these play and learn classes. I remember when my daughter was really young, it was just finding, the things that you could put them in that would, distract them for long enough and that would be, a bit useful. And so they've got some really good play and learn classes that are developed for, different age groups, from almost as young as 6 months all the way through to 3-4 years old. So that's another one that I would recommend. Little Champions, they're in Palm Jumeirah. You can do kickboxing, gymnastics, Zumba, aquarobics. Ooh. So there really
is
a wide variety.
Have a better life than us, tell you what. I've got a question for you on the text line, Simona. Emily's been in touch saying, we have a 7-year-old and an 18-month-old. It seems impossible to please them both. Where are we missing? I've got a couple of friends who've got a very similar age gap and have the same kind of frustrations. I would always say Green Planet, because I feel like you get different things out of it at different ages. At 18 months, they're just going to want to, have a look up at the trees and grab things and be completely entranced by all the nature there. And my daughter's 7, and now that she's reading, she goes around and reads the little notices about the birds and the plants and the animals as well. And then you can go up and down, and it's stroller friendly. So Green Planet would probably be my top pick.
I think that's a great one.
What about you?
I would also say the aquarium, the Dubai Aquarium, is really, really fun, because again, when you're 7 months old, you're just, you're triggered by movement and by things. And there's a couple of areas where, if I recall correctly, you can actually you you used to be able to touch maybe the starfish or something.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe that's something for the young, you know, for the 7-year-old, 7-month-year-old, and then the older kids. There's so much. I mean, I love going to the aquarium, so I don't think there's an age limit on that.
Me too. Before I let you go, what are some of the big deals and discounts you've got on the app at the minute? So a message going, where can we find this? It's Kids App. That's Kids with a Q, and you'll see it by the red icon in the App Store. Save us some money, Simona. So,
I think, look, Tramp Extreme is always, again, one of my daughter's favourites. It's such a crowd pleaser. It's it's in Dubai Mall, Nakheel Mall. And I love, time is money for me. So if I can do an errand, I happen to have a 9-year-old daughter, but if I can do an errand while my daughter's well entertained with a friend, then that's a perfect outcome for me. So Tramp Extreme is a trampoline area, and it's, you can choose different combinations. It's 77 dirhams for anyone above 3 years old for 1 hour. There are caves to explore in the Nakheel Mall one, so that's really cool. Adventure Parks and Cafe in Safa Park. It's good for toddlers and kids who are older and can climb, and there's even a cafe there. So that's, again, another one that I think is good, and there's a different price range, but they start maybe around 70 dirhams. Fun City is in malls, and so it's all over the place. And again, I sometimes have to bribe my daughter to take her places and to be able to, to go and do an errand and then let her run around for a bit. So Fun City is, an area where there's arcade games, there's interactive things, there are a few rides. So you could spend half an hour to an hour there perfectly, so on. So those would be some of the quick ones. But of course, we've got all the big ones. We've got the aquarium, everything we've discussed, you can find on the app.
You've got some great deals. I'm just having a quick nosy as well on Motion Gate. Now the weather's cooling a little bit, my kids start to go, can we go on the roller coasters? And I'm like, yeah, that's not something we do every weekend. That is a bit of a treat. But, the discount
Absolutely.
There from 330 down to 221, and that is somewhere that you could spend the whole day. So a nice kind of end of term treat, or build that into
Absolutely.
your plan.
All the water parks.
Yes.
Weather's getting good now.
Well, my hair would have disagreed yesterday in the 92% humidity, Simona. But yes, I live
but
in.
But today it's not, right?
Oh no, it's an emotional roller coaster as well as a real one. Thank you so much. Really do appreciate your time. And yes, if anyone wants to get in touch, I'll very happily send you the name. It's kids.com if you fancy having a Google. But the best thing to do is to get the app QIDZ. Simona, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. You've got me excited for the weekend. And we'll catch up very, very soon indeed. Take care.
Thank you.
And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.